303-883-9944. It's time for Swap Shop. Come on, friends. If you're going to sell it, we're going to tell it. So pick up your phone and let me make it perfectly clear. It's time for Swap Shop. Good old Swap Shop. We're gonna try and sell it here. 740-383-9944.
Hey, yeah, this is Glenn, Glenn Coble, and I'm your host here on Swap Shop. We know that Swap Shop is in a quiet stage now, but there is future. If we eventually get this virus taken care of by the new supposed inoculations that are coming out. Apparently, in England, they're going to inoculate people next week. So it is around the corner. I'm not sure how many people they will be inoculating, but apparently some of the testing, and I'm not sure it's testing anymore. I think it's actual inoculation of citizens. I think I read that the first people to get it are going to be the people that take care of us, the doctors, the nurses, all the people that are in the health services. They're going to get the shots first, and then they're going to move to, I guess, people over at 80 are going to be the first. And then I'm pretty sure they're going to work their way back age-wise. And also, if you have, what do they call it, alternative problems, like in my case, I had a heart attack about 10 years ago, and that might qualify me to get it a little ahead of somebody that's in perfect health. Let's hope that's right around the corner, and I'm absolutely certain that once we get to the point where people aren't uncomfortable about going and buying stuff from other people, that Swap Shop will not necessarily take off. I think the most number of calls we've ever had was like 10 or 11 in 1 hour, well, in 45 minutes. And that's pretty good. That's one every 4 minutes or so. And we're looking forward to that time. But we don't want you to feel bad for me. I am having a good time doing a lot of things like what I'm planning to do today. I'm going to read one or maybe two stories that are noted for their relationship to their short stories, and they're noted for their relationship to Christmas. One of them is A Gift of the Magi by O. Henry, and the other one is The Little Match Girl by Hans Christian Andersen. Now, I'm going to read the longer one first, and we'll see if we have enough time to read the shorter one. But if you have something that you like, if you have an event that's coming up that you'd like to mention, we'd love to hear from you. And we've got a phone call already. Let's take the caller. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
I have some furniture that I'm willing to give away.
Oh, that's fantastic. Tell us about your furniture.
Okay, I have, I'm downsizing, and these are things I've had for a long time. They need a little loving care. They're not perfect, but they can still be used.
Excellent.
One of them is an upholstered rocker. Another one is a recliner. Now, the upholstery's bad on that, but I do have a cover to go with it to cover up the where the upholstery's bad.
Now,
and then I have
did you say that was a couch? What was that?
A recliner.
A recliner.
And it was a Lazy Boy recliner. And then I have a swivel desk chair that again needs a little patching on the seat, but it works fine and everything. And then I have a piano complete with a bench and with music in it, if anybody could use that.
Is it upright or is it...
It's a spinet.
Spinet. Oh, so it's small enough to move.
It's old, you know, but yes, it would have, you know, for all these things, somebody would have to be able to pick them up.
Right.
And I do live here in town. I'm going to just leave my phone number. If anybody's interested, then they can call me about these things.
Excellent.
And I do want to stress, if they call me, I may not answer the phone because I don't pick it up unless I know who's calling.
Right, I understand
but
that.
If they'll leave a message, I will call them right back.
All right, excellent. Okay, the
so
phone number?
So my phone number is
740-382-5634. Now, I've got a deal for you. If you'll come pick up my upright, I'll trade you for that spinet. Oh, my upright is so heavy. We moved it up here from Athens, but I had three young men that were helping me at the time.
Well, this one has been moved several times because I had it, and then I had it in a basement that got flooded, and people helped me move it upstairs and put it right in front of a heater to dry out, which I found that wasn't the best thing to do.
Yeah, you can crack the soundboard.
And then when my grandchildren started being interested in music, I let them have the piano, so they've kind of decorated it with toy cars and stuff like that, you know?
That's
but
all right.
It still plays.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... But,
and spinet pianos
I'm downsizing, and I'm not going to have room for it. So.
Okay. Spinet pianos are a lot lighter than uprights or grands. So, yeah, good idea. Okay, so let me read this back to you. You have an upholstered rocker. You also have a recliner, and you have a swivel desk chair. All of these need a little loving care, more or less. And then you have a spinet piano available. They're all free. Is that correct?
Right.
And all you have to do is go pick them up, right? But make sure you call 740-382-5634. Let me give you that number again. 740-382-5634. Did we get that right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I hope we can help you downsize. I understand the feeling.
I'm sure somebody could get some good use out of these yet, you know.
Absolutely.
So I hope there'll be some calls.
All right. Excellent. We do, too. Have a great day, and we'll mention this two or three more times during the hour.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Let me give you that information again quickly. This lady has an upholstered rocker, a recliner, and a swivel desk chair she'd like to get rid of. They're all free. She also has a spinet piano, which is a neat deal because you can move a spinet piano with a couple of people. You don't need four or five like you'd need if you're going to move my upright. And her number, you got your pencil ready? Her number is 740-382-5634. I'll give you that again. 740-382-5634. Help that lady out. She wants to get a move on and downsize a little bit. I understand that. We struggle as we get older saving stuff. I have a garage full of my kids. All three of my kids have left stuff behind for us, none of which we can use. I have more soccer uniforms and spikes than anybody should have, and baseball equipment. But anyway, all right, well, let's don't forget, you can call us 740-383-9944 here on Swap Shop. And if you have like a church bazaar or something like that, we'd be glad to announce that for you as well. All right, let me read this. It's called The Gift of the Magi, and it's by O. Henry. The language is a little difficult, and I may bump up against a few words that I don't pronounce correctly. And it's a little vague, I guess is the word. So follow as closely as you can. Are you ready? Oh, wait a minute. We got another call. Let's go to the phone. You're on the air. How can we help you?
Yes, sir. Hello, good afternoon. I have some tools, some woodworking tools, excuse me, for sale.
Uh-huh.
they belong to my dad, and we lost him in January of this year.
Sorry.
But he was 90, almost 91 years old, so he lived a good long life. And
there you go.
He collected a lot of tools, but they are some woodworking tools that somebody, I'm sure you'd want somebody to use.
Good.
A woodworking lathe.
Big tools.
Big arm saw. A big band saw, a scroll saw, a small band saw. There's just a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
A bunch of tools out in the barn and garage. So if anybody's interested, and any reasonable offer, you know, probably won't be turned down. So,
okay.
My number is
740-244-244.
Yes, 3147. My name's Tom.
3147. Okay, thanks, Tom. Now, let me read this back to you. You've got lots of, and I'm not going to list them all, but you have lots of woodworking tools. You have a lathe, which I'd love to have, but I know my wife would shoot me if I brought another thing in the house. You have a radial arm saw, and you also have another type. You have other saws.
Bandsaw.
Scroll saw.
Bandsaw, scroll saw, drill press. All kinds of stuff.
Bandsaw, too. Okay. And you're going to take any reasonable offer.
Yeah.
And your number is 740-244-3147. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll announce it a couple more times while we're on the air. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You as well.
All right. We are up and running. I may not get through both of these stories. We may only get one. And I will break away if the phone rings. So if I break away from the story, I'm sorry. Okay? All right. 740-383-9944. If you're interested in putting anything on Swap Shop, including... you know, if you have a bazaar at church, those are nice to put on there anyway. All right, let's start this. Maybe we won't get through it. Maybe I'll go to the short one. Let's see how many minutes. I've only got the... Maybe I'll go to the short one first. And then if I have lots of time after that, we'll go to the longer one. Okay, the first one, the short one, is The Little Match Girl. And these are both Christmas stories. All right, I'm going to start this. Are you ready? It was dreadfully cold. It was snowing fast and was almost dark as evening came on, the last evening of the year. In the cold and the darkness, there went along the street a poor little girl, bareheaded and with naked feet. When she left home, she had slippers on, it is true, but they were much too large for her feet. Slippers that her mother had used until then, and the poor little girl lost them in running across the street when two carriages were passing terribly fast. When she looked for them, one was not to be found, and a boy seized the other one and ran away with it, saying he would use it for a cradle some day when he had children of his own. So on the little girl went with her bare feet. And that were red, and they were blue with cold. In an old apron that she wore were bundles of matches, and she carried a bundle also in her hand. No one had bought so much as a bunch all the long day, and no one had given her even a penny. Poor little girl. Shivering with cold and hunger, she crept along, a perfect picture of misery. The snowflakes fell on her long flaxen hair, which hung in pretty curls about her throat. But she thought not of her beauty nor of the cold. Lights gleamed in every window, and there came to her the savory smell of roast goose. For it was New Year's Eve, and it was of this which she thought. In a corner formed by two houses, one of which projected beyond the other, she sat cowering down. She had drawn under her little feet, but still she grew colder and colder. Yet she dared not to go home, for she had sold no matches and could not bring a penny of money. Her father would certainly beat her, and besides, it was cold enough at home, for they had only the house roof above them, and though the large holes had been stopped with straw and rags, there were left many through which the cold wind would whistle. And now her little hands were nearly frozen with cold. Alas, a single match might do her good, if she might only draw it from the bundle, rub it against the wall, and the warmth of her fingers. So as at last she drew one out, whoosh, how it blazed with the burn. It gave out a warm, bright flame, like a little cradle, or like a little candle, as she held her hand over it. A wonderful little light it was. It really seemed to the little girl as if she sat before a great iron stove with polished brass feet and brass shovel and tongs. So blessedly it burned that the little maiden stretched out her feet to warm them also. How comfortable she was! But lo, the flame went out, and the stove vanished, and nothing remained but the little burned match in her hand. She rubbed another match against the wall. It burned brightly, and where the light fell upon the wall, it became transparent like a veil, so that she could see through into the room. A snow-white cloth was spread upon the table, on which was a beautiful china dinner service, while the roast goose, stuffed with apples and prunes, steamed famously and sent forth a most savory smell. And what was more delightful still was the wonderful, the goose jumping from the dish with knife and fork still in its breast and waddling along the floor straight to the little girl. But the match went out then, and nothing was left to her but the thick, damp wall. She lighted another match, and now she was under a most beautiful Christmas tree, larger and far more prettily trimmed than the one she had seen through the glass door at which the rich merchant lived. Hundreds of wax tapers were burning on the green branches, and gay figures, such as she had never seen in the shop windows, looked down upon her. The child stretched out her hand to them. Then the match went out. Still, the lights of Christmas tree rose higher and higher. She saw them as stars in the heaven, and one of them fell, forming a long trail of fire. Now someone is dying, murmured the chilly child softly. For her grandmother, the only person who had loved her and who was now dead, had told her that whenever a star falls, a soul mounts up to God. She struck another match against the wall, and again it was light, and in the brightness there appeared before her dear old grandmother, bright and radiant, yet sweet and mild and happy as she never looked on earth. "Oh, grandmother," she cried, "take me with you. I know you'll go the way when the match burns out. You too will vanish, like the warm stove, the splendid New Year's feast, the beautiful Christmas tree." And lest her grandmother should disappear, she rubbed the whole bundle of the match against the wall. And the matches burned with such brilliant light that it became brighter than noonday. Her grandmother had never looked so grand and beautiful. She took the little girl in her arms, and both flew together joyously, gloriously, mounting higher and higher, far above the earth. And for them there was neither hunger, nor cold, nor care. They were with God. But the corner of the dawn of the day sat the poor girl, leaning against the wall, with red cheeks and a smiling mouth, frozen to death, on the last evening of the old year. Stuffed and cold she sat, or stiff and cold she sat, with the matches, one bundle of which was burned. She wanted to warn herself, poor little thing, people said. No one imagined what sweet visions she had, or how gloriously she had gone with her grandmother to enter upon the joys of a new year. Kind of a sad, sad, sad tale. And I have seen that on television. It always kind of made me cry. That's okay, I guess. At my age, I'm allowed. Hey, we do have a couple of things, and I hate to break the mood up, but we did have a couple of people with some ideas of, I guess you could call them Christmas trades or tchotchkes. We have a lady who would love to give you, free of charge, an upholstered rocker. She also has a recliner and a swivel desk chair available for nothing. These are free. She also has a spinet piano. Now you better take some help if you're going to move that. But give her a call, 740-382-5634. Let me give you that number again so you can run across the room now. Go get that pencil. Bring it back. This is for the upholstered rocker, a recliner, a swivel desk chair, and a spinet piano. It's 740-382-5634. We also have a gentleman that has woodworking tools. His father has passed and left these available. He does not use them. So he'll accept, a fair offer. Give him a call. He has a lathe. He has a radial arm saw. He has a scroll saw, a band saw. He has all sorts of woodworking tools. If you're in need of those, I would give this gentleman a call. 740-244-3147. I'll give you that number again as well. 740-244-3147. Let's see if we can get through this second story. It's called Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. $1.87, that's all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetables man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealings implied. These times Della counted it, $1.87, and the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it, which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. While the mistress of the home is gradually subsiding from the first stage to the second, take a look at the home, a furnished flat. At $8 per week, it did not exactly beggar description, but it certainly had the word on the lookout for the Medici squad. That word means poor people squad, okay? Medicacency. In the vestibule below was a letterbox into which no letter would go, an electric button from which no mortal finger would coach a ring. Also appertaining thereunto was a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during the former period of prosperity when its professor was being paid $30 a week. Now, when the income had shrunk to $20, though they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he would call Jim and great hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced you to Della, which is all very good. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully over a gray cat walking a gray fence into a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months, with this result. $20 a week doesn't go very far. Expenses have been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy present for Jim, her Jim. Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him, something fine and rare and sterling, something like a little bit near being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. There was a pier glass between the window of the room. Perhaps you had seen a pier of glass in an $8 flat. A very thin and very agile person may, by observing his reflection in a rapid sequence of longitudinal strips, obtained fairly accurate conception of his looks. Della, being slender, had mastered the art. Suddenly she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost a color within 20 seconds. Rapidly she pulled down her hair and let it fall in full length. Now there were two possessions of James Dillingham Young in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window some day to dry, just for to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor, with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed, just to see him pluck at his beard of envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her, rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her, and then she did it up again nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her brown jacket, on went her brown hat, with a whirl of skirts, and with brilliant sparkling still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street, where she stopped the sign and read the sign, Madame Sofronie, hair goods of all kinds. One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madame, large, too white, chilly, and hardly looked like a Sofronie. Will you buy my hair? Asked Della. I buy hair, said Madame. Take your hat off, and let's have a sight at what it looks like. Down rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a precise hand. Give it to me quick, said Della. Oh, the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. Forget the harsh metaphor. She was ransacking the store for Jim's present. She found it at last. It surely had made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any other of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, probably proclaiming its value by substance alone and not by ornamentation. As all good things should, it was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw, she knew it must be Jim's. It was like him, quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With the chain on his watch, Jim might properly, anxiously about the time, look at the time and for any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly on account of the old leather strap that he used to place in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way to a little prudence and reason. She got out her curling iron and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made of the generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl." But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made, and the frying pan was on the back of the stove, hot and ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door that he had always entered. Then she heard his steps on the stairs down the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying little silent prayers about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened, and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow. He was only 22, and to be a burden by a family. He needed an overcoat. He was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as an immovable as a setter at the scent of a quail. His eyes were fixed on Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, not surprise, nor approval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she was prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with a peculiar expression on his face. Della wriggled off the table and went for him. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't you look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let it be happy. You don't know what a nice and beautiful, nice gift I've gotten for you." "You've cut off your hair?" asked Jim laboriously, as if not to arrive at the patent fact that yet even after the hardest mental labor. "Cut it off and sold it?" said Della. "Don't you like me as well, anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" Jim looked at around the room curiously. "You say your hair is gone?" he said, with an air almost of idiocy. "You needn't look for it," said Della. "I sold it. I tell you, sold and gone, too. The Christmas Eve boy, be good for me, for I went for you. Maybe the hair on my head are numbered." She went on in the sadness, seriousness, and sweetness. but nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim? Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della. For 10 seconds, let us regard with discreet scrutiny some inconsequential object in the other direction. $8 a week, or $1 million a year. What is the difference? A mathematician or a wit would give you the wrong answer. The Magi brought valuable gifts, but that was not among them. This dark assertion will be illuminated later on. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it on the table. Don't make any mistake, Dell, he said, about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make me like my girl any less. But if you're unwrapped that package, you may see why you had me going for at first. White fingers and nimble fingers tore at the string and the paper, and then ecstasy. There was a scream of joy, and then, alas, a quick feminine change of hysterical tears and wails, necessitating the immediate of employment of all comforting powers of the Lord of the Flat. For there lay the combs, the set of combs, set and back, that Della had worshipped long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoise shell with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession, and now they were hers. But the tresses that should have been adorned by those were gone. But she hugged him to her bosom, and at length she was able to look with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." And then Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen the beautiful present. She held it out to him and eagerly upon his open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with the reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at it in time, hundreds of times a day. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under his back of his head and smiled. "Della," he said, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just as present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now suppose you put the chops on." The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat whose most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasure in their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they were, the wisest. Everywhere they were the wisest. They were the Magi. All right. And right on cue, we have another phone call. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you? Hi, you're on the air. Can we help you? No, I guess we can't. Well, it was right on time. It was just as we finished. Isn't that a nice, interesting story? It's not necessarily a nice story, and it's written in very stilted language, hard to pronounce, and I'm sorry if I didn't do such a great job on it, but you got the point. The young lady sacrificed everything to get her husband or boyfriend, whichever it was. I'm assuming in those days it was her husband. She got him what he most desired, and he got her what she most desired. And the way they got them was that they both sold the things that the other person thought they were enhancing by buying those gifts. When you're going out to buy gifts for Christmas, what do you think about? Or not going out anymore, so many people shop online, kind of takes the fun out of it. I remember as a little guy, a real little guy, I used to go to my mother's dresser drawers, and I'd open them up, and I'd try to look at the back of the dresser drawer and find something she hadn't used in years. And then I'd wrap it up and give it to her. As you know, I was 5 years old, 6 years old. I didn't have any money. But the idea of just giving something kind of was the sweetness of being a child, and kind of the sweetness of that story, that those two young people did whatever they could to help bring joy to their loved one. I hope you can find that in your heart. I hope we can all find that in our heart. Aren't we tired of all the anger that's going around? It's not just going around in Marion. It's going around in Ohio. It's going around in the United States. It's going around the world. We don't need that anger. And all anger does is wear you out. I do find... I find that I really like most people, and that makes my life likable and more enjoyable. If I can look at somebody like today, I had Jeff Ruth here, and I terribly enjoyed watching him smile and tell his stories. He has one of those smiles that makes you smile, you know, and that's kind of what I hope I did. In reading these stories, I've read a lot of stories. I've read a lot of speeches for you. I'm trying to make you smile, I guess. And I don't think we can always be happy. I think happiness is overused. The smile, the feeling you get by using, 36 muscles in your face to smile, whatever the number is, That feeling that you get inside, that warm feeling of being happy that you're with somebody, being happy that you're who you are and that you can do good for the world. I hope you can pass that along during this holiday season, whether you're a Christian, a Muslim, an atheist. I hope you can pass on your joy of living to other people, because that's what we need to do at this time. It's kind of a struggle to be a human right now, isn't it? Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. You can enjoy being yourself, inside yourself, and being with people inside your families and inside your world. Now, right now, we have to stay separated from them, but you can see them on Skype, or you can see them on Facebook, or anywhere. Keep those relationships going. Keep the love going, because it's a lot better to love someone than to hate somebody. I hope you have a great day and have a good weekend, and be safe. I'm Glenn Coble. You've been listening to Swap Shop.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.